Crumb.
Hey, dude.
Sorry, man. Let me set this up.
No, here, no sweat.
Here we are. All right, there we go.
Yeah, that looks good, dude. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is a very special, I guess we'll call it a bonus episode of the Bourbon and Barbarians feed on the Cromcast. I am one of the three heads of the Cromcast. I am Luke, and I am joined here by my my buddy from way back, Levi. Say hey, Levi.
Hey, how are you?
Hey. So Levi is the head of the monstrosity that is Planet X Games. I think it's his brainchild. He has loads and loads of people that he's working with, and we'll probably talk about some of the cool art and writers and peoples that he's sort of brought into Planet X. But he's he's the ringleader or the ringman of the crazy ass circus that is
Planet X. Sure.
Yeah. So we talked. I don't know when it was. But it was with the Howling Crater module, like it was around the time
of
the Kickstarter. Yeah, so that's happened. Obviously, the world has moved on, as the gunslinger might say. there's a different air about us right now. We're dealing with some crazy current climate. But there's a couple different projects that we might can talk about. And I mentioned this like just a few seconds ago, but Levi and I. We knew each other back in Western Arkansas when we were, I don't know if we were quite kids, but we were teens, and we were like, I don't know, some of my very first games we were playing in the same game group. So there's a lot of RPG goodness that maybe we can get into here too. So, all right, Levi. So what can we talk about? We can talk about the Phylactery. That's a project that wrapped up sometime, a couple months ago, I guess, for Zine Quest. That would be something we can hit on. And then you've got a Kickstarter that's about to drop. So maybe we can talk about them in that order. So the Phylactery, it's about to ship out, right?
Yeah, I got the copies for it on Monday. They actually lost a box of the copies, but I have enough to ship to my backers. The extra box was just my extras for cons and for online orders and stuff. But the printing company is good. They're making it right. So they're gonna print me up some new copies.
And so this was the first issue of your zine, which is called the Phylactery, but it's something that you did with Zine Quest this past time around, right?
Yeah. So Goodman Games sponsored this thing, the kind of a promotion with Kickstarter. Called Zine Quest, and basically it just kind of a siren call went out to creators, hey, make a zine and put it on Kickstarter, and we'll put the power of our promotion behind it. So hundreds if not thousands of people made zines, and I'd always wanted to do one ever since I was like 13 or 14 and answering those ads in the back of like Starlog and Fangoria, for like to get onto to zine mailing lists. I always wanted to do one. They would come to my house, but of course I didn't have very much talent back then. So I'd send my stuff off, and God knows whatever happened to it. and who knows where it went. But I always wanted to do one. So I kind of took that opportunity and kind of meshed it with the OSR stuff that I really really like, and the. I'm a big fan of those. Do you remember the Arduin Grimoire?
No, I don't. That wasn't something that was on my radar. And so so maybe we can say, like, I was playing D&D with you guys. I was I don't know. I was 13 or 14 in like 94 or 95, but at that point you were a couple years older than I was, and you and a couple other guys were running games, and you were much more plugged into shit. Like, I had like multiple versions of those brown skinned like second edition like class type books, and I had like second edition Dungeon Master's Guide and like Player's Handbook, but I also had like the Rule Cyclopedia. That was the extent of like what I was getting a hold of. So I wasn't getting any of the extra stuff.
Now this the Ardwin Grimoires, they go back to the late 70s. They're kind of, I don't want to call them a ripoff, but they were just kind of an evolution of Gygax's early stuff. It's a guy named Dave Hargrave from somewhere here in California, and he basically just took Gygax's rule set, just kind of wholesale, just kind of morphed it over and you know, took his own house rules that he was doing, and he would make these little brown booklets, like the old booklets like you get for like Chainmail or Greyhawk or Blackmoor, and he made these. They weren't much to really look at. I mean, they had some pretty cool art, but as far as, you know, they're kind of shoddily put together. Everything was typed up on a typewriter. You know, it was low budget, but the content was what really just struck out to me. If you opened up one of those little Ardwin Grimoire books, I mean, it could be 80 pages, and I mean, it was jam packed with interesting things. I mean, it had plot hooks, magic items, and new classes, and you know, you'd turn to the back and there'd be, you know, six pages on, you know, various demons from the Elder Hells, you know, or you know, whatever.
Yeah, so I'm looking at these now. These are old, but yeah, you said it, but like 70, 77, 78, like that's when the first ones were coming out. But were they published, like, even when you were, like, in high school and when you were gaming? Like,
oh, no. Oh,
okay. So these things died out before that?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I actually stumbled on them because my first DM, Dave McClellan, Chris's dad, our friend Chris,
right.
he had a bunch of them. So, you know, looking through his stack of RPG books, for whatever reason, those little brown booklets kind of called out to me. So I would just pore over these things, and again, they were just filled with so many cool ideas and just interesting plot hooks. Like every page was just dripping with charisma and flavor. It was awesome. And those always stuck in my head. So, you know, of course, as I got older, you know, I tracked them all down and, you know, kind of followed it as new companies would pick it up and try to make it work. But nobody quite had the magic that Hargrave had to kind of make it go. And if you want to understand, like, what kind of a real kind of, I don't want to call it, again, I don't want to call it a direct ripoff, but really a kind of a morph from the original D&D system it was. Early on, there was in Gygax's stuff, there was in the monster stat blocks, there was where it was supposed to say percentage lair, as you know, the monster was in its lair. There was a typo and it said percentage liar. So Hargrave looks at this, you know, he looks at this this old book, and he gives all of his monsters percentage liar, you know, which I'm sure that. So every monster in the first couple Ardwin Grimoires, they have a stat block that describes their chance to lie, you know. So it's just little things like that, and again, just drips with flavor and crunchiness and charisma, and it always stuck with me, and that's what I tried to put into the Phylactery. I wanted you to open it up, and man, this thing is just from page to page, it's just jam packed with all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, and so at this point, you've sent out PDFs to all the backers of it, and like one of the cool things, and maybe we can kind of use this as like a segue towards Skullcano as we get towards talking about the new Kickstarter. But one thing that I really do appreciate about like how you run your Kickstarters and the thing that you do is reward, like you have the various backer levels, and they tend to be pretty straightforward. And then you have like you have stretch goals. Right, but you're not going crazy with stretch goals. Like your stretch goals for the Phylactery were like another 12 pages, another 6 pages, another 6 pages. Like you kind
right,
of
right, right.
Like, is it true? Like, did you max out the binding on like what the Phylactery is? Because it's like it was the maximum stretch goal that you allowed for. Is that
right? It started out as 24 pages, which is what I had written when it launched. And pretty quickly, it blew up to 48 pages.
Right.
So I had to get busy. you know, a lot of the stuff that I was going to put in, you know, issue two or use later on, I just, well, you know, I might as well just start using that.
Right.
You know, fortunately for me, you know, it worked out. Two monsters turned into four, you know, two pages of magic items turned into six pages of magic items. Or, you know, one adventure turned in basically into three adventures, you know. So there's plenty of stuff in there for any character of any level. And then for any kind of DM who's of the OSR mind that, you know, just wants to go deep. There's so much stuff in there. I mean, I really, really did pack it full. And didn't just try to waste very little space.
Yeah.
And you can, you can actually thank James West for that. He's got that beautiful black pudding that you turned me on to last time.
Yeah.
And I love the way that he doesn't waste any space. He, you know, he makes the OGL as small as possible. And, you know, he goes from inside cover to all the way to the back cover. You know?
And everything's really art, too. Like, there's art. Like, there's content that's mixed with the art. It's the kind of thing where it's not just this page is text, and then we've got the obligatory art piece on the next page.
Right.
Like, because it's that zine, like, OSR, like, punk aesthetic. Like, he's writing and on top of, like, some crazy-ass art. And it's all just, like, this big, seamless mishmash of things. Yeah, that's cool. So one of the things otherwise that, like, I was super psyched whenever I backed the phylactery, like, it's legit OSR. Like, it is not like 5e in that first e feel. It's actually like it's the real deal, like BX, like for like first edition stats and stuff. So I and you hinted at this, I don't know if I can put you on the spot, but dude, like your previous modules that you've put out, like they're just aching for like a BX Labyrinth Lord, like first E Osric release. So is that going to happen?
That's that most definitely coming. Yeah.
All
right. You know, there are licenses to navigate, with the, you know, Swords and Wizardry, and, you know, there's the OGL covers a lot of stuff, so it makes it sort of easy. But you know, I want to get some blessings first before I just dive head first into stuff. But I've got some good relationships in place with the folks that I admire. So hopefully, you know, everything works out. But I would say that, yes, you could probably expect to see Jumble Tomb of the Mummy Bride and an occurrence of Alan Crater for sure being presented in that, you know, that BX OSR style.
That's cool, sure. Man. Because they would really, like, and I think I talked about this. I talked about Jungle Tomb at one point, like, as a one thing when that came out, and I talked about it at that point in time, like, it's an old school hex crawly inspired kind of thing. It's very much a moduley kind of thing, but like one of the things that I like about what you've done with Jungle Tomb as well as Howling Crater and from everything you're saying about Skulkano Island, it's gonna be like 100 plus pages. Like, none of these are like 24 or 48 page modules. They are the module, but there's like plot hooks, and you've not necessarily included like crazy hex maps, but it is essentially like settings, like campaign settings. Like the Jungle Tomb thing is like Isle of Dread inspired, and I would think that Skulkano was kind of that same feel.
So my favorite module, old school module, is Hidden Shrine of Tomoachan. And that is where, you know, that's where Jungle Tomb of the Mummy Ride comes from.
Okay. So is it a big scope, module?
No, not at all. Hidden Shrine of Tomoachan it's really just about the dungeon. But I can remember enjoying it so much, and it's just marinated in my head for 40 years, you know, about all the different, you know, what I love so much about it. So I just take kind of my admiration for that module. And then I just do my own thing, you know. But it's definitely inspired, you know, by Hidden Shrine of Tomoachan. Just in the same way that Howling Crater is inspired by Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, obviously.
Right.
They both feature, you know, ships that are crashed and have lain untouched for, you know, however many centuries. But what you won't find in Expedition to the Barrier Peaks are, you know, bloodthirsty hillbillies and, you know, insane AIs and, you know, disintegrator robots and, you know, all this weird crap that I just shoved, you know, into 100 pages of you know, Howling Craters. And there's a whole setting there as well. Now, you had said that you thought maybe Jungle Tomb and the Mummy Bride was more like Isle of Dread. I think Skulkano Island is far more like Isle of Dread.
Yeah, yeah. And I say that just on the basis of, well, one, I'm not familiar with the what's
Hidden Shrine?
Yeah, Hidden Shrine. But what's the last word that you're saying?
Oh, Tomoachan.
Tomoachan, yeah. Is it like Kuatoa or something like that type
no, critters? No. You're thinking of that other. It's an Underdark adventure. Okay. It's the Hidden Shrine of the Kuatoa.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
Sorry, go ahead.
but you know, I'm not familiar with that module. But looking at the back of the Jungle Tomb module that you guys did, there were like extra locations and plot hooks and sort of like extra stepping stones. In it, that's how it struck me, as like almost like you would be exploring this broader expanse, and you would have these various like adventure destinations that you would need to get to, and it was just all about the DM to kind of populate them. But I get the Skulkano, like King Kong / Isle of Dread dinosaurs and crazy shit going on. Yeah.
Well, a fellow writer buddy of mine that I kind of sent a early copy to, he described it as. Let's see if I can get this. He described it as if the Isle of Dread dropped LSD with the island from Lost, and then they just sat around watching monster movies and listening to Black Sabbath all night. He said that is the module that you would get, because it's got all those grindhouse that grindhouse aesthetic to it and the callbacks, but there is a real dark streak that runs through it. All in the same time, it is 100% a heroic fantasy module. So, you know, it's not a genre bender, or, you know, there aren't any crazy sci-fi, you know, surprises or anything inside of it. It's 100% heroic fantasy, but, you know, man, this is the most ambitious one that we've done yet.
And it's upper level too, right? Like it's a high level module.
Yeah. If you play fifth edition, it is a tier 3, but can very, very easily be a tier 4. You know, that's, you know, the 11th, 12th, 13th level, all the way up to 17th level. So, on one hand, I'd never written a high level adventure before. So I spent more time on this one than I did probably on the other two combined, just trying to put them together. Because high level adventures, man, they are difficult to write.
Yeah, man. I've only played, and I think Josh and I have talked about this at some point on the show before, but like we played a 3-5 campaign when we were in grad school. We basically started out, if not at first level, then at like second level and grinded it out. Right. And then we had like the obligatory like end of the first campaign, and then we still advanced like five levels, and then we picked up like as more, you know, high level characters, and then grinded that out. I've only done that like the upper level gameplay once. And it was a fun experience, but man, I can't imagine like organically trying to come up with stories that would complement that kind of I don't know, just the crazy shit that you can do. Like when you're a 15th level character, you're it's insane. Like the level of difficulty, I guess, that you would have to think about.
Well, the level sweet spot for sure is like that third to fifth level. That seems like everybody has the most fun.
Right.
But, you know, for longstanding campaigns, I mean, they can go on, you know, really until the cows come home.
Yeah, they can just go on. Yeah. But so on that front, like, and you and I have talked a little bit about how you play tested previous modules. Like how the hell do you do that with Skulkano? Like how, like, cause the last time you were on for Mummy Tomb or Jungle Tomb or the Mummy Bride, like we talked about playtesting, I think, with like your son playing in a, like he kind of like he knew 5e, right? Like, and kind of brought you back to 5e as a system. Right. And so like you, that was like putting you through the paces. And I can imagine with that, you're playing through a wide variety of those sweet spot characters. Like, what do you do with Skulkano with you have, like higher level characters? Like how do you figure out what works?
Well, I sent several copies off to you know, a bunch of different people that I knew that run their own groups, and I said, listen, just throw this at your players, man, and try to break it. really, I mean, I want them to do their worst. I mean, I want them to trash these monsters. I want them to just walk all over these encounters. You know, I really want to put this module through its paces. And let me tell you, man, there were some changes that had to be made, you know, because players, you know, they got ingenuity, man, and they'll find your holes, they'll exploit your weaknesses, especially the veteran guys, man. They'll get at the root of what is wrong in your game. So it's been pretty vigorously play tested. I've play tested it several times here locally before we went into lockdown, and it's currently, you know, it's being edited and cut down and chopped. And you said earlier 100 pages, but it's more clocking in more at 140 plus.
I knew it was 100 plus. Book. Yeah, it's huge. Like the Kickstarter materials that you had sent to me before. Like it's, yeah, it's a that's a big ass book, man. Like that, like the revised Labyrinth Lord PDF is like 140 pages. Yeah, and that's like the entirety of like BX with like your monster manual and how like your DMG and your player's handbook all in one spot.
Yeah, there's a lot to handle when it comes to introducing you know, kaiju to D&D. I don't mean like I'm the first person to ever do it. Obviously, I'm not. But when you're doing that in an adventure, basically you have all these Tarrasque level threats running around. All these, you know, high level, high CR creatures, you know, that are existing in the same microcosm. So you have to figure out a way that makes sense, and you also have to figure out a way. Why aren't they just killing each other all the time? And then, is that really going to be the end all be all threat of your story, of your module? Well, no, probably not, because usually, you know, these monsters aren't fighting, humans aren't fighting these monsters, because it's, you know, it's usually pretty futile. So there has to be another kind of background threat to all that, and that's what I did with this module. You know, the kaiju are there, not merely as like window dressing, because you can certainly fight them, and you know, if you're a crafty veteran player and you're high enough level, and you know, even if you get lucky enough, you might be able to defeat one. But they're not the principal threat of the module.
Okay, can you talk about what the big bad is, or is it shrouded in secret, or like what is the overall sort of like arc of the story? If you're not like gonna fight King Kong or Godzilla, like what's the overall story for the module?
Well, listen, you can fight those guys. You can fight the kaiju. that is completely up to you. And there are ways even to maybe even level the playing field a little bit. But it'll never be a cakewalk. But as far as like the basic outline of the module, without giving any huge spoilers away, there is, you know, the skies are red. There's apocalyptic warnings are, you know, flashing across the land. You've got these doom slakers that are basically, you know, scouring the land, you know, speaking these dark prophecies, and you know, it all comes to a head. And you got weird weather and odd things are happening. There's a little bit of setup. Again, this is sandbox, but there's a little bit of setup. And then your heroes, they assemble and they go to Skulcano Island. After getting to Skulcano Island, it comes rapidly apparent that, again, the kaiju are not the big threat. They're a threat, but they're not at the heart of the threat.
Okay, so is this like a Call of Cthulhu-esque, like things are coalescing towards this magic moment where
I mean, a little bit
horizon? Okay,
a little bit, but it's this group called the Doomsayers of Crackthull, and they're these kind of odd alien planar beings just from an odd, weird, strange dimension, and they've, you know, they worship entropy, they worship destruction. You know, they're always murmuring to spheres of annihilation, and
okay,
you know, they have no sensory organs left because it's just raw source code of the universe that's just being fed through them at all times. And you know, they hate all life, and they are drawn to the light that is our world. And when they get here, they, you know, what's the best way to do it? Well, let's just unleash these titans on the world and grind it back to the, you know, primordial soup.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty That's pretty Lovecraftian, though.
And these guys, they're kind of a weird sort of blend between, you know, high level wizards, anti druids, and then like Cenobites from Hellraiser a little, yeah, with a little bit of like the Void thrown in. It's they're very very odd.
Cool.
Inscrutable, kind of the alien sort of intelligence.
Okay. So this episode is going to drop kind of close to or around when the Kickstarter goes live. Is that like May 11th? I'm shooting
dark. May 11th.
Okay, cool. So May 11th is when the Kickstarter goes live. And Kickstarters, do they always run for like 4 weeks or something like that?
No, I'm only doing 3 weeks for this.
Okay.
I was going to drop it on Tuesday, but I messed up my marketing. Okay.
That's when you're supposed to drop a podcast, is on Tuesday. That's the sweet spot. Is that what you do with Kickstarters too?
Yeah. Okay. Same deal.
Okay. So it comes out on May 11th and it'll run for 3 weeks. And so this is 140 page plus sandbox for ultra high level 5e characters. What else? Like as far as the backer levels, of course you'll have like PDFs and then the print copies. Like can you talk about any of the like various stretch goals that you might have lined out that you want to advertise?
Yeah, most of the stretch goals are they're just more content, you know, better art, more maps. I've brought back most of the artists that I worked with before, Adrian Landeros, who did a ton of stuff for all of my previous projects, and then Ed Bickford, who is this great artist out of Kansas City. He did the cover for the Phylactery, and he's done a ton of interior illustrations for me as well. Both those guys are just fantastic. Then I brought on a new guy, John Gulo is his name. He illustrated all the kaiju, and he did a fantastic job. I mean, he really brought his A game, man, and they look crazy. When you look on the Kickstarter, you'll see what I mean. You'll see that, you know, the giant two-headed ape or a, you know, crazy 150-foot mire worm, you know, you'd be like, oh my god, man, who drew this? That was John Gulo. And then of course, Carl Sternberg, Skull Fungus on Twitter and Instagram. He is doing all the maps, and this one actually has more of his maps than any of my previous modules. He's really going all out.
So have you ever used anybody else for maps beyond him?
I have. I used Ian McGarty for the Grindhouse exclusive version of the Phylactery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Ian is a great he's a great cartographer, great writer too. Another guy, Rocky Gardner. They have they're the Silver Bullets. They did Creeping Cold and a bunch of other modules, and those guys are super talented. Cool. They're great guys.
Yeah. There's a lot of Skull Fungus maps though that creep their way into your stuff though.
He and I work well together. We respect each other. We respect each other's limits and work. And I'm on top of just us being good collaborators. I'm just a huge fan, to be honest with you. Like,
I think the aesthetic really does like complement like what you're going for with the way that you write stuff and the like you were talking about James West, like Doomslakers, like his zines that he did, like the way that he uses the peripheries of the page, and there's like.
Right.
There's flavor and there's feel and there's like this attitude that comes across like with the extra stuff on the page. That's totally like what Skull Fungus, like what Sternberg like channels into his stuff. Right. There's so much.
Oh yeah, man.
It's a, you know, it has the same like real feel as like the Dyson Logos, like that generation of cartography, but he's adding in like a cartooniness that's its own attitude on top of it.
I think his stuff is more, he reminds me of all the underground art that I was, you know, all the kind of the punk style of stuff that I was a big fan of in my 20s and 30s. I think he definitely brings that kind of aesthetic to the table, but he has a thing going that is all his own. And I don't see anybody else doing it quite like him. So again, I will, you know, again, we're friends, we're collaborators. but it's not very often that you get to work with somebody who also is the best at something that you like, or that is your favorite at something that you like. Right. So, you know, it would be like working with Errol Otis, you know, like I love Errol Otis' stuff, you know, it would be a dream. That's what, like, that's what working with Sternberg is like. You know, he's great to work with, and I'm such a huge fan that every time I get a map, I'm just blown away.
Yeah, cool, man. Yeah, and you tuned me into a couple days ago. Like, he's got his own little mega dungeon. I shouldn't say little. He's got his own mega dungeon that he's doing on Patreon. Like, that's the Patreon that he launched. He's basically building this mega dungeon, you know, sort of like tile and map by map.
Yeah, $3 is the buy-in, and you get, I mean, I think the first map pack was like 15 maps. I mean, yeah. it's unreal. Like, I mean, I think he kind of exists in the same zone that you and I like to think that we exist in, you know, where we like to make things affordable. We're not trying to gouge people on prices. You know, I think he's doing it for, you know, because he loves it. You know, I think that is really, I mean, I can't speak for the man, but, you know, if I had to guess, that's what I would think.
It's that DIY, like, it's the aesthetic that kind of, like, it would be predictable that the price point would be what it is with the way that it looks and the way that it feels, right? Like, it would be disingenuous to be charging an arm and a leg. And that's not to say that it doesn't look good. It's the punky feel of it. It's not like something that has this sheen to it. Like, I don't know. It's killer.
it doesn't look commercial, man. It looks like like something that you would find in the back of like an underground zine, or, you know, that you would. It just has its own feel, and it. You know, you got other people who are doing the same kind of stuff. You got Sean Aberg and Dungeon Degenerates, and, you know, all those guys. They're amazing. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, my favorite is still Carl's. You know, his Skull Fungus stuff is killer.
Yeah. Awesome. And so you'll have a handful of different backer levels that people can get into that people can get into the Kickstarter for, like, and so maybe this can kind of feed back into like the ethos or the mindset that you have for Planet X. Like, you have like had extra stretch goal type things, like you had a barf bag for like Howling Crater, like these little extra things, but you've never gone crazy with trying to like make your print costs stupid. Like, I guess that would be the raw way to say it. Like, one of the things that I've liked about how you've done Kickstarters is it's basically like, do you want it as digital or do you want it as a print, and are you going to get some extra print stuff to go along that? Like, is that true? Like, do you is Skullcano going to follow similarly with that kind of like digital print, and then you're going to get extra stuff on top of that jam packed within the file, or how is it going to work?
Yeah. So I did that with both of the previous modules. And again, with all the bonus content for Phylactery, but Skullcano Isle, Escape from Skullcano Isle, that should, If you know, the stretch goals are met, it'll swell up to get pretty big.
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of extra content in there that could go in, and then there's on top of all that, there's a 10-page players pack, which is just kind of odds and ends, things that might not necessarily fit directly into the module as a whole, but that a DM or a player can look at and really expand on the material that's already in there. You know, it's not necessary to play the game, but man, if you got it, it's kind of a little bit cooler.
So maybe this is a good question then. Like, it's not something, like, I've never thought about the practical aspects of like of running a Kickstarter. But if you're doing perfect bound books, like, there's going to be some limit to the page count, right? Like how does that factor in? Like, if you're wanting to like add more, like with any of these, have you ever had like a, my maximum page count for the Phylactery is 48 pages because that's what I can do at the price point. Like, that surely that factors into things. Like, how does that factor into like a 150 page book that you're envisioning?
That book, it gets so big, but then you have bonus material. Like I said, you have all that bonus material. And listen, if we start to run long, there's, you know, we have a great layout person, Tracy Steele, out of Jonesboro, Arkansas, actually. She's a fantastic layout person. She did the layout for Howling Crater. She did the layout for the Phylactery. She's great. But she knows how to move things around and to put things into perspective and not make things too crowded. And I have a real focus on I'm not a big fan of wall of text kind of stuff.
Right.
So I like bullet points. I like sidebars and box, box sections and whatnot too, just to break up the monotony of things. So, there's a pretty good plan in place. We've got it pretty polished down. But you know, we'll have probably 6 months of time before it hits backers. So we've got plenty of time to get it razor sharp.
Cool, man. Cool. So Skullcano is going to happen basically here in May. The pandemic has thrown monkey wrenches in anybody that's doing DIY and small scale, like small press type stuff. I know, like the other day, I listened in on the Cobalt Con session that you did. You were part of that with like Skeeter Green and like who are the guys that were hosting it?
Oh, Zach Glazer from Frog God, Jeff Talanian, Ian McGarty that we were just talking about a minute ago, Rocky Gardner, Greg Gillespie. There were a lot of talented dudes on there.
So there was some cool talk about like how the hell are you coping with this world, but. You know, you have a load of ideas. Like after Skullcano, that's kind of your first trilogy. And I know you've got like Phylactery stuff in your head and in the works. Like, are you going to keep on cranking with modules? Like, what's the way that you think that Planet X is going to keep going?
Yeah. Looks, this is probably the last big one for a while. They've progressively gotten bigger since, progressively gotten bigger as they've gone along. Mummy Bride was, I think, 64 pages, then 100 pages for Howling Crater, and then now we're at 140. So I'm looking at kind of, I don't want to say scaling back, but just making simpler and still high quality, but simpler adventures, ones that aren't, some of these could be entire campaign settings, so I'm looking more at doing, that range of things. And of course we're going to keep going with the Phylactery as well. It's about half written. We already have the cover art.
For number two, you're talking about? Yeah.
For number two. Right. And we've got some great artists on that. A lot of the same people are returning. So, But I'm a planner. I have things planned out for modules planned out for Planet X probably 2 or 3 years, roughly.
So do you have like currently we're wrapping up, and I guess depending on when this drops, like we just wrapped up or we are wrapping up our talk of some Western type stuff, and we're getting into Manly Wade Wellman and some like weird Appalachia. Like, do you have anything that's going to span like not high fantasy or not like Barrier Peaks, like bonkers? Like, do you have any other genres that you're wanting to get into?
I want to get into them all, basically. at some point. I'm not in a crazy headlong rush to do so, but I like it all, man. All that weird Western, heroic fantasy, sci-fi, and mashing all those together, and then all the creepy Lovecraftian stuff. I've got ideas for that kind of stuff too, but I've got this one. It's kind of bonkers. I mean, it's only about 12 pages as it is now. I mean, maybe 16, 17 with art and stats, but it's called, it's called the town that dreaded cream filling.
Okay.
And it's basically a weird Western, kind of old, got Aces and Eights, Boot Hill style adventure, a little bit of Deadlands in there, that kind of flavor. But it's basically what happens if Twinkie the Kid is real. Okay, and because his expiration date is long gone, he's gone bad. So you have Twinkie the Kid as the villain of the whole module, and he's no pushover. And then there are some Easter eggs here and there from, you know, for some other things. And it gets pretty weird with some of the stuff that happens. But I'm thinking that it might be the funnest thing that I've ever written. It's so bonkers and so much fun that I just can't see anybody playing it for a night and not walking away going, oh man, that was insane. Like, that was pretty cool, you know?
That sounds like that's something you need to like run at a con or something. Like that can be the Planet X, like your staple.
look, man, I might even just write it and give it away for free. I don't know. Cool. You know, it might just be one of those things. I don't know. I got this idea for it, and a couple buddies and I sat down and kind of workshopped it, and just were just cracking up the whole time. But then when I started thinking about it, I was like, oh man, this could be really, really cool if you did it right. You know, like this could be a great night of sitting around the table throwing a night and memorable, which is the most important thing.
Right. Nice, man. I guess we've kind of circled around. I'm looking here. We've recorded a fair, probably 45 minutes. We can go ahead and start wrapping it up. Cause I think we hit on, the phylactery and, you know, Skullcano starting up. Kind of future directions. Is there anything else that maybe you want to talk about that's on the docket? Like and Planet X, like you've had, I don't know, a handful of like mini games that you've put out and done, like kind of in that zine, like I'm just gonna mail this shit to you guys kind of yeah. format. And you put out a coloring book in the midst of the COVID strife. Like there's been other stuff that you've done, but like. Is there anything else that we need to mention that's maybe like kind of up on the horizon?
No. Look, there's stuff, and it's going to come out when it comes out. I'm writing every day when I can, but I'm big on appreciation. So if I have just a second, I just want to say a word of thanks to the people that have kind of helped me along. Because when I got into this, man, I had no direction. Like I had no idea what to do, how to get things done. And that, you know, that can cause people to just quit right away.
Right.
But I had some really good mentors, along the way that really, really helped me out. There's a fellow named, Casey Christopherson. He's, he's got like 80 plus RPG credits to his name. Another Kansas City, Wichita guy. He's done work for just tons of people in the business, Frog God, Necromancer, Trollord Games. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Goodman. And he was really instrumental in making sure that I was, you know, on point and that I got the best, the best people to kind of help me with advice. You know, he hooked me up with Matt Finch, who gave me some legal advice, some advice on hosting things, Zach Glazier, Skeeter Green. He introduced me and opened the door, for me, the way the door was open for him,
right?
You know, and without him, I don't think that Planet X Games or any of it would exist, because he really was instrumental in doing that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was neat with the Kobold Con session that you did the other night that I sat in on, like to hear, you know, that I was like one of the Twitch. It was, I made a Twitch account. So that I could ask questions. It was a new thing for me. But like to sort of hear you guys sort of talking back and forth. But it really is, I mean, the OSR is a community, and the indie, like a small press RPG group, like the there's all of this community aspect, the same way that there is with Howard fandom and any other types of, you know, weird and pulp fandom. So it's cool, man.
No, for sure, like, man.
I get the need to, the desire to want to throw out some kudos and some props, and you know.
Listen, and all those guys from Frog God Games, man, they have been nothing but supportive and helpful, and they realize, like with the hobby, and I hesitate to call it an industry, but more of a hobby, that there's enough for everybody. They get it, and they are really, really in to supporting indie creators and people who have new ideas and giving people a chance. And that goes for, you know, Skeeter Green, Jim Wampler, Tim DeShane, all these guys that have been so very kind with their time, to help guys like me out, you know, and they interact with us and we bounce ideas off each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
The silver bullets too, you know, Rocky and Eddie, and, they're all just great guys. So, and another shout out to John Barnhouse from Frog God Games. He's another guy who's just been super instrumental. So, I'll cut my congrats and thank yous out there.
That's fair enough, man.
Thank you, John.
All right, guys. Well, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. If anybody wants to find the Chromecast on the web, you can just like Google the Chromecast, and if it comes up Chromecast, say no, I really wanted Chromecast. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff, and I don't have it written to my memory the way that Josh does. He's normally our go-to guy for like talking about the contact the Chromecast bit at the wrap-up of an episode. But the more important stuff is, Levi, if people wanna get in touch with Planet X, you guys have a crazy, crazy Instagram. You're blowing that up with some goodness there. But like, what are the other ways that people can kind of see what you're up to?
Well, Instagram is It Came From Beyond Planet X. We're Twitter. We're Planet X Game Company. Facebook, Planet X Games. You can find our stuff on DriveThruRPG. You can just reach out to me personally. However you want to do. We'll have a store up by the end of the year, but you know, right now we're just doing orders from home. So,
right on, man. Well. We will we'll boost the signal for you, and I don't know, like we didn't get to talk too much about like a reminiscing on gaming stories this time around, but next time around maybe we can do that. And
I'd love to.
And whenever you get the pass modules out with like some swords and wizardry or labyrinth lord, like 1E or BX rules clones, that's what we need, man.
All right, they're coming. I promise.
All right, cool. All right, guys. We'll talk to everybody later. Thanks for listening.
Look, I know the supernatural is something that isn't supposed to happen, but it does happen.
It is not heresy, and I will not recant.